Longtime fans of the show should be familiar with the lender formerly known as Sue Pullen, and I'm pleased to announce that she's back, fresh off a rebrand and ready to help as Sue Mackey. Sue is a certified mortgage advisor at Fairway Independent Mortgage, an equal housing lender who focuses on finding the right product for you and your needs. She has over 20 years of experience helping thousands of homeowners. Whether it's purchasing, refinancing, or even a reverse mortgage, Sue will help. Sue's licensed in 36 states now, so reach out and let Sue Mackey it happen for you. The best way to reach her is just give her a call at 520-977-7904 or in an email, spullen@fairwaymc.com. Fairway Independent Mortgage has an MLS number of 2289. Sue Mackey has an MLS number of 206048. That email again, spullen@fairwaymc.com. And that phone number is 520-977-7904. Shoot Sue an email and let her know she needs to update that address.
You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow. I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
Disclaimer time. This is where I tell everyone to lighten up. It's just a podcast. Trading is like that roller coaster at the amusement park. Thrilling, unpredictable, and potentially stomach churning. What works for one person might leave another clutching their hat in the wind. Our hosts and guests, they're awesome, knowledgeable, full of insights, but we're not financial advisors. So don't rush to make any investment decisions based solely on our banter. Always consult with a professional or do your own research. Plus, let's face it, we like to have fun, laugh, enjoy the trading ride together. It's all in the name of good podcasting fun. So remember, take it easy, don't bet the farm, and keep your seatbelts on at all times. Thank you for listening. All right. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the China Shop, home of the Band of Traders podcast, sometimes referred to as Jackass 5.0. I'm your host, Kyle. Joining me on the roundtable, we've got Flary and Vonta Trading's Mr. Banks. I think tonight on the agenda, we're going to be letting Banks get some stuff off his chest before we dive into a conversation about momentum and different ways to use it. So that will sum up our week in the good, bad, and ugly before wrapping up with some new bold predictions. Before we check on those ongoing results, so let's get the self-promotional stuff out of the way. Banks, you want to kick us off, man? What do you guys got going on over there at Vonta?
Nothing. Yeah, nothing crazy on our end. Pretty much the same old morning preps, live, live trading, kind of going through it. I think Baba did a
AMA was awesome.
Yeah, I was going to say Baba did an AMA that we recorded. And other than that, it's just, I'd say the typical, weekly, progress.
That's stuff, man. What about you, Flary?
Same old.
I know you keep
man.
Saying no, but this is bullshit, dude. You told me about an amazing whiskey podcast thing that you've been working on.
Oh, good call, dude. Yeah, we should shoot that out. I mean, it's not really, it's kind of like this. Like, I feel like I'm just like an honored regular guest over there, but my brother-in-law actually has now a whiskey channel and a tequila channel. So he's got, kind of like part of this thing, but like mm-hmm. he's got like this amazing collection of whiskey and now a growing collection of tequila. And they do like hunts where they go to different liquor stores, not only around like, so I'm from Minnesota, but not only around Minnesota, but like all over the country whenever they're traveling, things like that. So they're like hunting and trying to find rare bottles and, we do like mostly I go over there and drink with them. So we do like blind, blind taste tests and stuff like that. The channel is Rare Barrel on YouTube. And I'm not sure what their name of their tequila channel is yet, but whatever. It's definitely, there's some fun videos in there and you can watch me make an ass of myself drinking a bunch of whiskey.
I'm looking forward. I'm going to try and make a trip up there. I know you said that I can come up and sample some. Might be mm-hmm. fun to see what somebody who's the most whiskey I've ever drank is peanut butter whiskey from like the one with the black sheep on it. Like that's the only thing I've ever found that I could actually
taste. We need to get something different for you there.
But we should all do it and have a big old we could do a podcast there. They have a studio.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I'm sure you guys could probably work together on some things.
Oh,
and whatever.
Sure. There's something up.
You guys are in the same swim lane there, so
as far as whiskeys go.
I meant more like the the video production part.
All right. Let's see. As far as our show news goes, next week I got a conversation with Jason Greystone. He's the host of the Always Free podcast. He's also a Forex trader. And also, after we wrapped up with that, part of one of his introduction into trading was actually through poker. So I'm going to see if we can't set him up for a roundtable to kind of talk about the poker crossover stuff. Like, we've been kicking around that idea. I think he'd be an excellent fit for that.
I've got some poker guys too. If you want to, like, what would a poker player's game theory be? Interesting to how to structure that.
Yeah,
I know a couple of local crushers, and they have like, yeah, you join their room. They have like podcast stuff like that too. So I'm sure, again, a good connection.
We got someone who's like just a really good poker player. We got you, who's a good trader, but kind of does both. And then we've got the other guy who's a trader and does both. And we kind of see where the crossovers are from both of you guys to each other. I think that'd be fun.
Let's go.
What else was on here? Okay. Also, next week there will not be a recording. I'm going to be in Boston working on a project with Eric Mason. So nice. I may have something to put up, but we'll see. We'll see.
You don't trust us or what?
It's not that. It's that somebody's going to do all the website stuff at all. You know, yeah, it's not quite as easy as just record.
Oh, we'll just go live on YouTube or something, man. What's the worst that could happen?
I mean, you can give it a shot.
Give us the keys.
There you go. I promise
we'll take care of it.
All right. If you have any questions, you just want to yell at a stranger on the internet, shoot us a DM on Twitter or join the Discord. You visit Band of Traders Podcast, visit the guest directory, and check out all the deals and discounts collected over the years. All right, let's check in with the predictions from last week. I don't know how this is going to work, too, by the way. None of you guys were here for last week's predictions. So. And I don't think anybody has the numbers. We were predicting how many eval accounts got passed in the community last week. Baba was saying 15. I said 17. Or Joel said 17. I said 3 by Banks's wife.
Jesus.
So
she's a hell of a trader.
How many did she get this week?
Well, 0, because I got a long story beyond that. But
how many does she have left? Did I guess that right at least?
She has. Well, I'd set her up on the 5 top step ones. Yeah, I didn't even trade those this week.
What do you guys? You guys got some thing? Do I got to go back and watch some code to get in on this?
Give me your email address and your top step username, and I'll fill you in every time I see the little codes drop. It was just something that they did on Top Step TV. I got Joel set up, so I got a free spot.
All right.
Yeah. So in short, Top Step created their own platform. It's basically a TradingView knockoff.
It's like a skin or something.
And and they do $4.50 for 5 evals on a 50K. And that's that cost until you pass them.
Oh, wow.
Let's see. I could pull up the interface, do a screen share if you want to see what it looks like.
Does it literally look exactly like TradingView? Is it TradingView or did they
mimic
the code or whatever? It's probably like a skin.
No, I think it actually
is. Like, who did that? EdgeClear kind of did that with MotiveWave, like their EdgeClear X or whatever.
Ah, fuck it. I don't remember my password. Never mind.
okay, you guys can show me. Yeah. I never heard of it, and you were talking about $5. I'm like,
it's pretty. The resets still come with that, too. So if you blow it up, then just let it go reset for $450 at the next month. I've tested that 5 times now, I think.
Oh, dude.
All right. Let's just dive into the topic number one then, Banks. So why don't you tell us how Apex hurt you? Get the doll out.
Do you want the PG version or you want?
I think you can do whatever you want, buddy.
I think Gabe from Apex can suck a bag of dogs.
Why don't you start with what happened?
So going back to, this would have been 2 Wednesdays ago. So not this past Wednesday, last week. Looking for a trade, kind of a setup kind of piece, and happened to be kind of fading a bigger move kind of in some key spots, and took one stop going down kind of in a spot that I was looking for, and then caught pretty much the low of the afternoon, which is the weird part. I don't know if I told you this, Kyle. So when I entered the trade, I believe it was 2:15 which was my fill, and then the logs ended up saying my fill was 217.
Oh, I think you did mention that. That's weird.
Yeah, so it was kind of weird. I went into profit, went with a little bit more size than normal, was immediately like 400, 500 bucks in profit, and then immediately took a snap stop. That price didn't trade at all for the next 24 hours. I mean, for the whole day. And just looking at the candles, it was never traded. There wasn't any like lag. I sent them in. They asked for like a Dom recording. I sent them a Sierra Dom recording that another Apex trader uses and records. Then he asked for what has to be the Trade of Eight. So I sent him the Trade of Eight replay Dom. and they said, well, that's the recording, the replay, not the live data. And I said, well, I don't know how to get the live data from Trade of Eight.
Yeah.
You know, because it's not, I didn't record it or anything. So in essence, basically what they said was that unless Rhythmic or Trade of Eight says that there's a widespread issue, any sporadic issue, even like this, that is, and they said it was an error, but it's a sporadic error that they don't have the live, or they don't have to. They
admitted it was an error?
Yeah.
And they won't make you admit it on it?
Nope.
They won't wipe the stop?
Nope, because it's not a widespread issue by Trade of Eight or Rhythmic.
Wow.
Yeah. And that happened to another trader in our group, actually. They shut down the accounts. They auto liquidated an eval that he's still at $1,000 trail on, and they shut it down with that, and they just closed the account. And he went back in and asked for it, and he said it just auto liquidated. That was all that they gave. There's no data behind it or anything. But the thing about it is, I provided every piece of information that they needed.
Did you ever spend time on the phone with like the actual like data exchange, like doing their job for them? They kept saying that the trades were handled by Trade of Eight, and then Trade of Eight's like, we don't do any of their shit. They're
So I called Trade of Eight, and this is the scary part. I called Trade of Eight, and they're like, well, they're a direct competitor. They use our platform, and that's it. So in essence, they own the accounts, and Trade of Eight doesn't have to do anything with the accounts except the data, I guess, on their end of what they check, or at least that's what Apex told me, which I know is a lie. But so in essence, unless it's a widespread issue that affects everyone, you can have a phantom trade like what I showed, and they're not going to fix it. So I lost $3,000 that day.
Oh my God.
So
what was the time frame on that bar chart you sent me? And can I post that with this episode? I might make that the episode cover, actually.
So let's see. I can pull that up for you. I know it was on Wednesday. So it was Wednesday the 3rd at 2:15 Central. 2:15 and 18 seconds. And at 2:15 and 23 seconds, I was stopped out. For a 12-point stop that never traded ever till Thursday.
Price at that time was like 15 points above that, I think, or something ridiculous.
Yeah, so it went right to my take profit. I would have been up probably 1,000, 1,500 on the day, something along those lines. But the thing that kind of drove me crazy is that, so not only did they not fix anything, it was pretty late to the party on all this, so I didn't trade Thursday, Friday, or Monday on that account. So it's like you lose those days. And I just figured that they were waiting until after the 5th so that I couldn't request a payout. but in essence, they just told me to, you know, kick dirt at the end of the day.
Yeah.
So, I probably shouldn't speak so badly about them since I still have an account there, but I know that.
Well, can we also mention why you shouldn't be doing that, or? Do you feel like not poking the bear here?
I mean...
Or can I say it? Because I don't have any of their accounts. Oh, I don't give a shit.
You can say it.
So there's rumor out there that the only reason why they have positive reviews is because they will threaten to shut off your accounts if you leave them anything less than just a good review. If you leave them a shitty review or even a 4-star review, I think the screenshots we saw, the guy pulled that down because he was getting threatened for mentioning something that he thought was an issue that got changed with like their drawdowns or something.
Yeah, so we had a member post a picture of a review that was posted, and they threatened to close and shut down his accounts with no refund if he did not pull down the comments.
Yeah, I mean, dude, it's such a double-edged sword there because, I mean, in a way, you're a business partner with them, right? Like, to some extent.
You would think.
I mean, or at the very least, like, you're dependent on them for part of your business, right? Like, they're a yes. supplier of yeah. basically equity in the markets, you know, to some degree, or like in that tool. And they don't have, like, it's kind of like a casino, right? Like, they don't have to let the card counters play blackjack, right? Like, they don't have to let the, you know, vocal, I don't like what you did here people get to keep coming back and basically the winners trade. Because at the end of the day, if you're just like punting and losing over and over and over again, none of this, like, most people probably wouldn't have even recognized that. They would be like, oh, I got stopped out again. Like, they wouldn't know to pull a log or, like, they wouldn't even care to do a bad, like, review. They would just go and do it again. So it's like this interesting dynamic of, like, at the end of the day, I think what we learned here is, like, there's a fine print, and that fine print basically says, like, yeah, we do whatever we want.
Well, I think the real point is that they're not backing you, because that's not the actions of somebody that is letting you trade funds for them, you know, right?
I mean, does anybody really think that they're in it for the 10% or whatever?
No.
What do they get, 10 no. or 20 or something like
no.
that? No.
I mean,
they're
20.
They're in it for the subscriptions and the whatever, and that's their model. And I mean, the thing is you kind of have to play their game to some extent, right? Stuff like this happens and it right, sucks. But
let me pose this question to you. If your business model is taking subscriptions from people and pretending like you're backing them when they get funded and sharing the profits with them, if you have people that consistently beat the game and you're already set up as a business to fund traders, why not just fund them?
Because they know that it's less profitable to do that. I mean, I would you know? Assume they have metrics that say, it,
yeah,
like,
this
in
guy
the long
here,
run,
the guys that they turn on the system yeah. to stop them out when they're finally hitting like a home run trade on them. You know? Yeah,
dude. Without seeing the books, I wouldn't know. But I'm sure it's some metric of like the amount of people who are regularly seeing like payouts or like, you know, the influencers that are, you know, seeing these like 20. Mm-hmm. You know, whatever, like the 20 account stuff. You know, I mean, that's marketing, and there's probably a bucket for that. And then you have like, you know, banks, like guys who are just grinding out good, consistent payouts from these guys that like have like honest issues that pop up. And then you have basically their business model where they're making most of their money. And all of that stuff over there is more than paying for, you know, guys like banks who are just like able to grind out consistent payouts. And the marketing budget, which, you know, who knows what that is even like, what's going on over in that space. But I, listen, I'm not saying it's not wrong or like to like, I saw what you sent to me, man. I mean, it was like very clear proof. Like there yeah. was, it's very obvious that any good customer service would have looked at that and went, hey, you know, this is a good customer. He's 100% correct. There's no reason to not at the very least just say like, we'll credit back the stop. Sorry for the trouble or whatever. Or, I mean, there's a million things they could have done differently than the way that they handled it, for sure. Like, it was very obvious that they weren't wrong. And they just went back to the good old, like, we can just say we're never wrong. And what are you going to do? You're going to just right. like close the account. Right. So that part of it sucks. But the point I wanted to get to is like, you know, you get a stop skipped on a data day in any brokerage. Trust me, like I've had it happen on Sierra.
Yeah.
Like, and you like, what is Sierra going to help you? No, right? Okay. CQG, are they going to do anything for you? Dorman, are they going to do anything for you? Tradivate, are they going to do anything? Everyone goes like this and they point their fingers at everyone else and says, like, say, hey, sorry, there's nothing that we can do. Nobody's going to walk back a trade unless you're like in the group or the category that like, you know, guys like 2 Year was talking about on, you know, whatever that was last time or the time before, where they're walking back trades for guys, you know, that are talking about stuff that's so much bigger than, you know, what we're getting into. But unfortunately, like it's somewhat, I guess, of a cost of doing business. And I think it's actually, although it probably happens more frequently in this space here because of like that, live sim or whatever they call it, live sim environment. And that data from Rhythmic is dog shit. If we want to talk shit about anybody, it should just be Rhythmic data. Fuck Rhythmic data. Rhythmic data is absolute dog water. But anyways, it's like that cost of doing business, although it probably shows up more in that Rhythmic live sim environment. It still happens, you know, CQG and Sierra and like third party route, like all of that stuff still happens, and they never give you any money back. I'm sorry. Like, I've had it happen multiple times with a few different brokers. They never give you any money back. They just go, hey, sorry, it is what it is. Like, you know, and you know, maybe use this order type next time or whatever. And yeah, you probably get better customer service, you know, from, you know, your broker, you would hope, than you probably got, but it still happens to some extent. It just sucks because they get you by the balls there, because it happens. I mean, unless you like, you know, lose like your entire account, like somehow on like a power outage or some weird thing that happens. But like, the option with your situation, man, is like, what are you going to do? Like, yeah, you just what, close the account and leave like 15, 20K in profit in there and just say, oh yeah, I guess you're right, you guys suck, you're bad at doing business, and just like let them have their 15K. No, they right. know you have no other choice, especially like, I mean, they take a look at your account, they pull it up and they go, oh, this guy's not say anything. He can't say anything. What can he say? No, we're not going to credit you back that $1,500 stop. What are you going to do? We like, let us keep this 20K? No, fuck you. So, I mean, it sucks, but it is sort of like in my opinion, it's kind of a factor of like when you do business in these streets. I mean, honestly, if you look at, and again, not to downplay it too, because I think what they did is super shady and it's terrible customer service, because you're clearly right. Like, you have very clear evidence that you're right, and there's no grayness to it. There's orders, like there's a video of it. Like, it's just, you're just right. But like, you look at like the FX streets and some of the stuff that's going on with those prop firms, and like, I mean, dude, honestly, like this version of it for people that are able to, you know, actually extract money from some of these on a regular basis. Yeah, it sucks when this shit comes up, but like, it's pretty small now. And I mean, let that be a little small prediction. I think it's pretty small for now, because, man, I don't know how many of these, any of these companies will sustain this stuff. I've saw some stuff going around too about like these guys, like with the 40K, 50K, 80K payouts, 120K payouts, these influencers in a month. Like, what if everybody starts doing this? Like, can they support that? Like, what if everybody in here just starts like, you know, running up 20 accounts and realizing that that's probably the best way to beat this game is to buy 20 accounts and just keep blasting until you get to max payouts. Do they got pockets that deep? If all of a sudden, you know, 10,000 traders figure out how to get 2 max payouts on 20 accounts. I don't know. I mean, is it going to be a problem? Maybe. I don't know. But
probably.
I think to like back up, I think it's sort of a cost of doing business in that space. And it just sucks when it happens in your way, because like, dude, you're right. Like, and it sucks when you know you're right. You know enough about this. You're not some noob, like just trying out their product. Like, you know what's going on, and they fucked you. I mean, and that's like, what do you do?
And that was one of the main things that I was telling. I was talking to Bob and Kyle about this. I'm kind of like, if it happened to someone, I'm glad it happened to someone with some experience, because if I was a new trader and I saw this, and like, even if I knew that I was right in this scenario, there's no way I would come back to a company that did this. And I still might not, but again, there's not a lot of prop firms out there that, you know, you can do a 1 day pass and be able to get into a funded account or whatever. But you know, that's the main thing, is like, it sucks. And I agree with Flurry, but at the same time, like, you know, like he said, it sucks that it happened to me and I knew that I was right. It's kind of like going in to like a test when you were a kid and you know, you got everything right, but you got called out for cheating.
Oh God. Yeah.
You know, you know, it's like one of those.
Yep.
But at the same time, like, I mean, he's right. I mean, they kind of had me by the balls on this account because I can't pull out what's in there. Right. I have to continue to trade it. And they know that, but again, too, is there's another 100 traders behind me that are willing to get into an eval.
Mm-hmm.
So if they lose one guy, it's really not that big of a deal.
Yeah.
And that's where it comes down to, is they're making so much money on the evals and resets and all that good stuff.
Now, do you guys have a favorite one that actually you think does have good customer service or always pays out, never have issues?
I mean, I still think that Top Step is probably one of the best, to be honest with you. I mean, I've never had bad customer service with them. They've always been on top. Now, they may be delayed a little bit. I used to like it when you could call them up and you could talk to them on the phone, but now everything's automated and stuff like that. But I still think that they're one of the best.
The call into Top Step TV.
Yeah, I'm not going to call them Top Step TV.
All right.
I mean, if there's anybody who's going to survive, it's probably going to be them.
Yeah.
Through this whole thing. I mean, I would, everything's got to give me an agachi with these guys though. You know, Top Step was, much better before they tried to launch whatever that platform is. And now, you know, you probably couldn't get a hold of them for a month if you wanted to, or, there's so many problems going on, and but they're gracious. Their customer service is really good. And it always has been, and it's, you know, just slow down because they're trying to expand. But like, I would trust being up 100K in them and not like sweat it.
Yeah.
Like there is zero chance that I would be super comfortable. Like even doing max payouts a bunch of times with a handful of other people. And it's just like, it's just the space right now. Like it's a high risk space. So like any trade, right? Like you're only as good as when you take the profit. Like it's being in a 300 point runner and a 10 lot is only good if you actually sell.
Right.
And you're flat. And then you withdraw that money, and it's and you in stop your account trading
for the rest of that day.
Right? Yeah. So it's kind of, I mean, again, it's kind of like that. But I think, you know, probably the top step. If I were to have a run, like a big run up on an account, those would be probably the top people that I would, or the only real folks that I would trust leaving and growing an account with, like actually staying with them and feeling confident. Yeah. And they're, you know, I mean, the rules, short of the scaling thing, are probably the, you know, the best around, at least to like really trade.
Yeah. Another thing I don't like is the way they do a 1-to-1 for micro to mini ratios. Like you can trade five A's, but only five micros.
That's their one shitty rule. Yeah. So then once you go funded, whatever, but like scale, right? So like, what do they let you get up to like five and blah, blah, blah. Like you just scale and figure it out. Like they actually sort of promote what they promote to some extent. And you know, they pay you out on a reasonable pace. It's a trade, man.
Yeah.
It's and you have like the really like exciting big payout trades that come with a little bit of some of the shit that like you had to deal with banks. And then you have like the good old trusty, you know, top step. So take your shots across the board, you know, to fire a few bullets.
Longtime fans of the show should be familiar with the lender formerly known as Sue Pullen, and I'm pleased to announce that she's back. Fresh off a rebrand and ready to help is Sue Mackey. Sue is a certified mortgage advisor at Fairway Independent Mortgage, an equal housing lender who focuses on finding the right product for you and your needs. She has over 20 years of experience helping thousands of homeowners. Whether it's purchasing, refinancing, or even a reverse mortgage, Sue will help. Sue's licensed in 36 states now, so reach out and let Sue Mackey it happen for you. The best way to reach her is to just give her a call at 520-977-7904 or in an email, spullen@fairwaymc.com. Fairway Independent Mortgage has an MLS number of 2289. Sue Mackey has an MLS number of 206048. That email again, spullen@fairwaymc.com. And that phone number is 520-977-7904. Shoot Sue an email and let her know she needs to update that address.
You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
All right, let's move on to the next topic here that we got. And Flair, I think this is a really good one. Let's see how you actually wrote. You wrote this as gauging Momo and how that can keep you safer in a winning trade. Do you want to kind of just give us some context around what you're thinking here?
Yeah, so I mean, obviously, this week, for anybody who's kind of watched the markets, specifically like ESNQ, RTY, I mean, CL was even going bonkers with some of the geopolitical stuff. But we've just seen a lot of back and forth, right? So multiple 100 points up, multiple 100 points down. I want to say like 400 plus point ranges 3 days this week, or at least close, maybe like 350, and then 400 plus like 2 days. Anyways, you know, I think days like that, gauging momentum is a really great tool, which is there's no magical indicator. I know there's Momo indicators, but there's no magical sort of like thing that you can do to sort of say like, oh, don't step in front of this freight train. And it's always easy to see it's a freight train in hindsight, right? It's very hard to sort of gauge it in the moment, what's happening. And I think, you know, especially a week like this, let alone when a day like this sneaks up on you after you've had like some range bound trading, which is probably even the more dangerous version.
Yeah.
You know, can be really detrimental, especially if, you know, you're prone to tilt or making mistakes or, you know, adding to losers, all of the things that can like really get you in a tricky spot. This skill set of sort of gauging momentum, like not only from a risk perspective can save you, you know, some substantial amount of pain, but it can also make you a ton of money. And I think that's the more important piece is like, we talked about this, you know, maybe it was like 2 or 3 weeks ago, there was like that big down day that was kind of like the genesis to all of this, maybe like 2 weeks ago, where it's just like, call all your friends, tell them to stop buying and just sell. Right, like just keep selling. Make sure they're not buying the dip. Like just like make sure everybody's good and just keep selling. Because those are the days like when you just see it and you know they're just running through everything. It's just like give me the next rip to sell, give me the next dip to buy, and you're basically just like adding and bringing your average up the entire time. So, you know, two sides to this momentum sort of like idea that we want to talk about today is one, saving yourself from losing too much or, you know, missing that you're just wrong and there's just no way this is going to work. And then also getting in on it or if you're lucky enough to catch it as the momentum goes, which is like, you know, just one part luck, one part preparation. Like when you see that and you're already in the trade, you go, oh, shit, like, let's just keep adding to this thing. And you can really, I mean, those are your, you know, day maker, week maker, month maker type things.
Adding to those is so freaking hard though. For me, like it's easier to hold it and just hope for the moon, or at least have like, I'll have some like stretch targets. And then what I'll try to do is just watch how it interacts with my other points that I expect resistance to come into. And if they don't pause there, if they just blow through it, then okay, we're going to the next one.
Yeah.
That's kind of the way that I try to do it, but I kind of liked what you're sharing in the private DMs that we have there with like using average rotations. And I think you posted that on Twitter too. Like there was no,
right.
All of the average down rotations on one of the days were like less than, was it like half of what the normal was or something like that?
Yeah, that was Thursday. Yeah, so it was yesterday. Yeah. So we had the down move in the morning, which is always the sneaky part, right? So like they get you going, they got the down move. We found the low somewhere around like the 170, 180 ish area or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then we started making these up rotations. We reclaimed the opening range and every down rotation. So now keep in mind when we're ripping upwards, it's the down rotations that we want to sort of gauge. Obviously, you know, it's like a bullish order flow in a 200 point up move. Like, yeah, thanks, dude. You know, the up moves are going to be big in a rip upwards, but the downwards rotations, the counter rotations are what you want to sort of watch. And that was my point on the tweet was this, is if you look at the down rotations once that move started and, you know, it's like, oh, okay, yeah, the first two, yeah, whatever. Okay. Now we're like six rotations in and there's no rotations. The average rotation for that day, Thursday, is like 40 points, right? Mm-hmm. First rotation down was 30. The next rotations, and this is a counter rotation. So we rip up 70 points, down 30. We rip up 50 points, down 32. We rip up 40 points, down 36. And so every counter rotation isn't even getting to an average rotation size for that day. And so when you start to see that, and again, in my opinion, this is a gauge of momentum. So the buying momentum is so strong that even when the sellers step in or the buyers back off or the buyers start to take profit, the counter rotations can't even get to an average rotation for that day.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we talk a lot about like this confirmation risk versus price risk. When you have multiple, you know, 75, 50, I think there's 133 point rotation right after the 30 year auction came out. When you have 133 point rotation and you look back at the last 9 rotations that were counter, not a single one of them got over the average for the day. And only like two of them got over 35 points.
Mm-hmm.
Now, do you want to stand in front of 130 point rotation and hope that this next rotation is the first one that's going to be more than what, 40? And let's just be honest, if you were shorting and you were like thinking this is a short, how many paper cuts did you take along that way? And now how much of a rotation do you need in order to like sort of make back taking like two or three stops or whatever? And it just, the momentum is not there. And so that's a great gauge of momentum, is watching these counter rotations. If you can't get a counter rotation that even goes to an average rotation for that day or for that time period, whatever you want to look at, you know, the best thing to do is to wait. And what I posted on Twitter was, you know, okay, like if you think it's a short, fine, just wait for a counter rotation to go an average rotation. The funny thing is I didn't go back and take the, what do they call that? Take the victory lap or whatever. But the first rotation, the last rotation of the day was the first rotation since the bottom that was greater than the average for the day. It was 41.5 points. And I said, wait for a down rotation to go at least an average rotation, and then short a lower high. That lower high was 510. And where did we trade today?
Yeah.
And that was the next high. The mm-hmm. next lower high from the first rotation that actually went an average rotation after that tweet that I said was 41.5 points. The next rotation up went to 510, 5.8 or 510, and then we dropped 400 points.
God damn, you need to write that one up.
So again, like, but it's momentum. It's identifying these gauges of momentum. So the flip side of this is, and I wasn't on this trade, I wasn't in the long, but the flip side of this is if you're long, right? And you're seeing these counter rotations being small and the you know, directional rotations of your trade or in the way of the momentum being outsized, greater than the average rotation. Again, 75, 55, 133, 118, for even the last up rotation of the day, 41 points. All of these rotations continue to be greater than the average. You know, to your point earlier, like, where do you add, or you're uncomfortable adding? Just add on every up rotation.
Right.
Once you have a reversal, just start adding and maintain your average. Put your average below, you know, as soon as you see a down rotation that goes 40-ish points or whatever the average rotation for your time frame, the same concept as fractal, then you can start jumping in. So yeah, rotations, I think, is or specifically like counter rotations and really, you know, rotations in the direction of the momentum being greater than the average is also probably another, you know, decent metric to look at. But yeah, rotations in general, I think.
Do you ever look at the ratio between the width trend and counter trend?
Now you're giving away too much sauce.
Okay. that's good enough. I'll let me research that on my own. We'll get back in a couple weeks and we can talk about that one. Banks, how do you interpret momentum?
Yeah, so I would fall into the same category as Flaherty. You know, in the same aspect, I don't really look at the rotation size per se. I look at more of what the sellers or buyers need to prove. You know, for that move to make sense for me, I want to see them proving and kind of taking, you know, a 30-minute low or, you know, something along those lines where they're proving something to where this can be a counter rotation and this can actually be a potential top or a bottom.
And what do you mean by proving? You mean like somebody's getting rewarded? Like somebody's actually managed to take profit on that trade, meaning they're more likely to try it again?
Yeah. So like if, you know, like on that trade that he's talking about, like if you're short and you're actually taking a low of some sort of meaning, mm-hmm. you know, and you're actually at least taking that low and sweeping it. I mean, in all honesty, we should have been, you know, more aggressive on the lows, you know, on any of those rotations that were coming through. We should have been, you know, more aggressive on the rotations down. And, you know, kind of like what Flaherty said, it's, you know, buyers basically proved it when they needed to. They mm-hmm. kept the move going. They didn't let it slip. And that's kind of what I look at. I would say most of my trading goes around liquidity and kind of where we need to be targeting. And that move they didn't take anything. You know, buyers proved it. They proved where they wanted to go, and sellers couldn't get the ball rolling on any rotation. And I agree with Flaherty said. I mean, when you have a 75 point move, the sellers really need to bring it. You know, the sellers really need to be, you know, taking that move back to where trend start was.
Right.
You know, and actually prove that move to the downside. So you get 75 points up, and you get a 20 point down move, and then 60 points up, and then you get a 15 point down move. And it's just, they're not willing to step in and prove that that's going to be a high.
See, my issue, I think I find, is I'm typically the one of those guys that's trying to short it on those days and not getting rewarded, and then getting angrier and angrier and angrier until, and then hoping that I can recognize when they finally blow the top off that stop shorting this thing, you idiot, and buy it.
So I think that's like, I mean, trust me, ask me how I know, right?
Yeah.
I think that's why the other piece that I wanted to talk about too, or like one of the other metrics is like, and whatever, I'm just going to say it. Like I wrote down levels getting cucked. Like assuming, you know, you're not just emotionally trading and just firing clips off because you're like, oh shit, I want this to be a short and it's ripping. So I'm just going to, you know, click in, get stopped out, click in. Like assuming you're not doing that and you have, let's say, you know, three prices inside of this like 150 point move that just ripped through your three prices. Okay, so we go to your first level, right? And let's say it's a 1 hour gained level, right? Mm-hmm. I know that when we hit a 1 hour gained level, it should relatively be respected. Most of them get some sort of reaction. And that reaction I know should be like a 1 hour move, you know, right now is 78 points in NQ. So I know it should go 78 points. So when we get to a 1 hour level, and I sent us a screenshot or whatever, this was on Thursday of last week. When we hit these 1 hour levels and we're not going anywhere, like especially 85 points, and we're going straight through them, that's your first like, oh, that's weird. Okay, so 1 hour trend is up and we just hit 1 hour support, right? And we're not going even, we're not even slowing down one, or if we do, we bounce like 10 or 15 points. The same concept could be used for like a trap trader's level, right? So like on average, a trap trader's level should probably get somewhere about like a 25 to 45 point reaction. If you hit an area of like 800 trap sellers on the way down, and that should give a bid, right? These guys got fucked on the way back through. And and when you come back through there, if they pause and they pop like 5 points and then they rip right back through that level, that's telling you a lot about the momentum of this move. Because when typical, like maybe said another way, when your modes of work, whether it's gain loss levels, trap traders, whatever it is, like whenever your level that you have an expectancy for that's relatively consistent, that's with the trend, like doesn't get respected, what is the probability of the level below that getting respected? And then when that doesn't get respected, what's the probability of that level getting respected? And that's usually my kind of like rule is like, okay, I'll take a shot on the first 1 hour support, you know, fading the trend, right? And they didn't slow down at all. Okay, now my guard's up a little bit. Maybe we'll size down or we'll try to leg into the next level. Okay, I legged into that one and this move normally goes 85 points. I got a 20 point reaction on this super great level that had all this confluence. All right, now my radar is up. Let's join this trend. Let's go the other way. And you'll watch them just start to take out these levels, because what happens is once they start disrespecting support, they start going for major levels, major swing lows, major swing highs. And that's where you get those big, you know, 4 hour fuck you candles where they go and they take out major levels. And so when these like sort of interior support resistance levels, at least for me in my work, like when the interior 1 hour gained levels and stuff like that start getting taken out like that and disrespected, they're going for whatever. Like go look at the bottom of all of that. That's what they're going for that day. And so, you know, again, if you're in the move, that's, you're sort of cheering for that, right? Like, okay, maybe I like, let's take it the other way, right? I'm short and we're coming into untested support. We ripped this first untested support. Now I scaled out into it because I expect a reaction that my work is telling me I should get there. But when I scaled out, it didn't even slow down. And I'm going, shit, I wish I wouldn't have scaled out there. And now I got another level coming up. And that level hits and it normally bounces for 50 or 60 points. I'm expecting a counter rotation. I scale out and it only goes 20 points. Now I'm piling back in. I'm piling all of this back in. And I'm hoping that now we've got this momentum that's going and is going to push us to these major swing lows. And I think that's, you know, the flip side of that is like this can also be wildly beneficial once you can gauge that the momentum is on the side of your trade. And, you know, I mean, the same way that you want to sort of be defensive and, you know, not entering into positions and not trying to, you know, pick up quarters in traffic when you're fading momentum, it's also to join it, right? Or even to just like give up and just jump in, right? Like, like you said, like my tendency is to keep selling into the rip. Like, what if you sold twice or three times and then on the fourth time you just like join, like you're just like, you know what, just get in.
Like you're reading my trade log from Thursday. Give it two extra stabs. I didn't get it. And I go, fuck it. They're going to blow through it like that. Then I'm taking it. A lot of it really, like going back to kind of what you guys were saying there, it's all about how you interact with those levels that I'm really starting to put a lot more focus on. I think that's really kind of one of the missing keys that I've, you know, when you start out with levels and you start out doing your back tests and all the other stuff, you're just trying to take every single trade opportunity to gather the data for it and all that, and never actually paid any attention to like the how we got there or how we left there. Right. And I feel like those are two probably more important things to watch than just having good levels.
Yeah, and I think that's why it's like a general thing, right? Like, whatever your mode of work is. And that's why I started with like, there's no tangible to this. Like, there's just sometimes, you know, and like your group of people, if you trade with a group, like there's just a time where like you're confident enough where you're like, hey, guys, this is a sell. Like, sell. Like, I would not be buying this dip. Because you know, right? Like, you've seen the way that your work interacts with the market, and this is not normal, right? Oh, the tape's not normal.
Is that what it is? Is that, because there's certain times when I see like there's some certain sell-off bars that you look at that and you're like, that thing's going, that's going a while, and you just know when it hits.
Yeah, I think that's that. That's an experience, like, you know, the screen time, the equals MC squared of it. Like, you just, nobody knows that sort of stuff except for the people that are in tune with that level of work. And yeah, we're giving some general ideas here of like support resistance and rotations and things like that. But like, I know for my charts what those rotations look like that are sub counter rotations. I know what it looks like when a 1 hour support level that I draw systematically looks like when it doesn't work. But that same concept works for whatever you do, whatever, you know, a TPO trader would do, whatever you do. Like, again, the trap traders and those not bouncing. Like, there's sort of like this idea that like you can use your modes of work to gauge the momentum. And really, at the end of the day, does the conversation not just come back to like trusting your own work and like not fading it, right? Like, you're like, whoa, this, like, something, like you said, something's not right here. Like, this normally works, like, or my trades are normally work. And then what do you do when you go, oh wow, this is weird, like a trade or a setup that I have stats on that, you know, statistically normally does this and this is all of a sudden just like for four trades in a row at like what I would call an A plus level, just completely underperforming in an environment where I expected it to perform. Something's up, right? Like, right.
what is, sit, you know, on your hands.
yeah. Like, at the very least, sit on your hands. And, you know, I think, again, like the next step is like capitalize, right? Hopefully you're already in the trade and you realize that.
Yep. But
Banks, you mentioned volume, which I think obviously there's also this, like, you said too, like, sometimes you could just see it, right? Like, we kind of jokingly say like, oh, the boys are in, like, oh, like, and sometimes you see it right on the open. Like, oh shit, like, they mean business today. And, you know, is it the high time frame, the other time frame traders, they're present today? Who fucking knows? I'm just telling you that sometimes you can see it on the tape, you can see it on the time and sales, you can see it on the large trade, whatever you're doing, right? Whatever version of watching volume and pace of volume that's coming in, there is certain times in the market, like the sell-off, the geopolitical sell-off. I think it was the one from like April 4th or whatever. 2 weeks ago or a week. That was like, there was just nothing you were going to do. There was no balance. Like, they were just selling. Everybody was just hitting the exit. There was mass size coming in, and it happened like sort of like slowly and then all at once. And when you see that all at once, like, there's that like screen time volume thing where you just go, whoa, like it's the real, the tape's not normal. The kind of the rolling meme is on Twitter, but like, you have to be able to identify that, like, okay, all right, the big boys are here and they're selling. As silly as it is, like, you just find a spot to sell, and if, you know, you just start small, and if it starts rolling over, you just, you know, keep piling in and piling in and piling in and just give it work,
or basically give it room to work. Get an entry and
then jump in. Literally jump in anywhere.
Then you can use your average to, yeah.
Yeah, and that's such a hard thing to get in your mindset, like on one of those days, to join the party. Because, you know, when you're looking at that and you're seeing us go, like on that April 4th, I just pulled it back up, and you're looking at us trading 18.5 and all of a sudden we're 18.4, 18.3, 18.2, 18.1. You literally could have sold anything and made money.
Yeah.
except literally the low. But that was at the end of the day. Yeah. But we ended on the lows. But that's the thing is, like, you know, on those type of days, it's very hard, like, mindset wise, to say we're down 250 points, and I'm selling this right here. But again, it all goes into, like, those key spots and kind of knowing what your process is, because, you know, when you have a bounce and those levels that don't get respected usually get retested. Mm-hmm. You know, if we drop below them and we pop back to them, they're usually going to play from the other side. And I think that's one of the hardest things to probably mindset wise get into a trade that way. But those are the type of trades that are like month makers.
Yeah. Such a good point, dude.
Yeah.
Because like how fucked up is it that like the same level that you like emotionally just wanted to work on a dip buy, right? Or a knife catch now is where you actually should be getting short.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
How hard is that trade? Like, and let's just be honest, right? Like, we all want our ideas to be right. That's just sort of like the fucking ego that is in all of us, right? Like, oh, like I've got, you know, 345 is a level on that day. I guarantee you, if you look at the order flow on that 345 level on that 4-4 day, there was a shit ton of people trying to buy it and they just got, boom, ran right over. Like, just ran right over. And I'm sure it went like 345, 325, 345, zero. Like, and that's a hard trade. Like, being patient, imagine being patient and being like, I'm going to wait for my level. I'm going to wait for 345. And then it gets to 345 and you just get stopped immediately. And now 345 is basically the short from the backside. And right. You have to make that decision, you know, relatively quickly. And I think that's a great point, Banks, is like, how often is it that like what you thought was support is maybe a small roadblock or a pause, but it ultimately ends up being a great reoffer or a rebid, you know, depending on which way the rip is going from the other side.
Good discussion there, guys. Any other thoughts on that, or should we move on to good, bad, and ugly?
Move it on so the editor-in-chief doesn't get mad we run long.
She doesn't get mad. All right. Let's see. Who wants to kick us off then? Tell us something good, bad, or ugly about your past week.
I'll go, since we already talked about my ugly and bad, I guess. Well, that was kind of last week, but it kind of went into this week because I was kind of coming into the week pissed because of the whole talk of that. So I didn't trade my cash account really all week. The goal of this week was to get that account back to where it was when it happened.
Right.
So the good thing was is that I fell short by $200. So
that's close enough.
I was happy with the progress of it. You know, we had some good days. We had some good rotational days on here. And, you know, I guess the other bad thing is, I wasn't involved all that much with, the morning stuff. I don't know. I had a busy week at work too.
Well, you also got a baby coming too. Don't forget.
Yeah, it's true.
We missed you last week because you had the ultrasound, right?
Yeah, that was this week Thursday too. Yeah, so we only have one more week of that, so it's
all right. Is that going to be next week's ugly?
But
did you have a good?
Yeah, I mean the good was making it. I made most of the money back from what that was, so I would actually be at a payout right now if it wasn't for that. But it is what it is.
It's all right.
It's all right, though. We'll get it next week.
That's a smart decision, though. I like that idea. Just slow down, recenter, let the events pass past you, and come back stronger, right? It's all you can really do.
Yep.
Flair, you want to go or you want me to?
Good.
All right. So for me, I had a really bad Wednesday, I think it was. I don't know if it was a Wednesday or maybe it was just – I've been kind of going – like one step forward, two steps back for like the past 2 weeks, it kind of feels like. And it kind of was coming to a head on Wednesday to the point where like I actually sat down with like a paper journal and wrote out a bunch of thoughts and things that I was feeling, trying to understand where like the root of my issue was. And it helped to kind of do it that way. And it got me realizing that what had happened was like there's just so many new ideas that you get exposed to and that can easily creep their way into like what you're doing on a day in and day out. And if you don't stop and pop your head up every, you know, little bit here, or if you don't have something written down to fall back on, and I think that was my issue, is it's been so long since I've written down put to paper like what I'm looking for, what I want to see in order to enter trades. It's been so long since I've done that that I popped up to look around at where I was at and what I was doing. I couldn't figure out where the fuck I was. So a lot of the good for this week was just spending some time, like really like putting thought to like what I want to see, what I want the markets to show me for me to enter trades. And I think today was a good reflection of those results. The way I traded today, I thought was the way I want to trade. So I was really happy with that. Yes. Obviously the bad was just letting some of that stuff creep in, and maybe my reaction to that too probably wasn't all that great. I'm sure there's other ways that you can try to deal with some of those types of emotions or those struggles, but you know, you kind of, if you catch them, like that's a win, right?
Always. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Always.
Like,
yeah.
It's some of these things are so hard to even like spot. So anytime you find it, even if it took you longer, like celebrate the fact you found it, because now you can fix it. And that was what I wrote in my journal. Like, okay, now we know what the problem is. Now we can fix it. And that's such a great feeling.
What does Macro say? You're either learning or earning.
Yeah. Yeah. Spent too much time learning last week.
Yeah. I mean, but it's all for something. So that's good.
Yeah. And he says, as long as the progress is moving in the right direction, and that's kind of where what's going now. The momentum has shifted. My counter rotations have shrunk. Or at least it feels like that. So
got good momentum.
Yeah, exactly. Larry, tell me about your week, man.
Yeah, man. I think probably the good, you know, just the work lined up this week, you know, again, sort of hyper aware of this environment that we're in with momentum, why we kind of talked about that today. So was able to avoid some spots that would have been pitfalls and capitalize on some spots that were advantageous to move. So yeah, I mean, just like a, you know, it's nice when your work aligns, like whatever. In the poker streets, I always like, I'm very superstitious, so I always say this, like it's like there's no such thing as luck. It's just preparation and patience, right? Mm-hmm. Like you just prepare and wait, prepare and wait, and I feel like this week was like a nice, you know, symbiotic moment of that, where it's like, okay, I do this consistent work and, you know, now here we are. And it just kind of worked, right? The market just agreed with the squiggly lines I draw on the chart this week, and, you know, it worked out.
That's such a great point too, by the way. Like luck isn't, people look lucky, but it's the people who put themselves in positions to be lucky are the ones that get lucky. That makes sense.
Oh, I mean, there's yes, it does make sense, but there's definitely motherfuckers that run way too good and way too pure, especially in poker. Yeah, but yes, you're right. Like for the normal people who don't just like sun run all the time, yes, they're like you do have to like, you're like, oh, this guy's always ready to go. Like, well, yeah, well, you know, ask me how I know, right? Like,
right.
We worked hard to get here, and you know, again, that's like whatever. I'm sure there's some like famous quote there somewhere. Preparation meets patience is luck, or some shit like that. I forget what it is, but anyways, I always try to remind myself of that. And I felt like this week was like a good version of that. It's like you just stay steadfast, and then you know, sometimes the market just agrees with your line on the chart, and shit works out. So that was the good. The bad, I don't, it's probably like a pretty close tie here between bad and ugly, but I got COVID. So I've been battling COVID for this week, and it wasn't like super, yeah, we'll call it bad. So it like wasn't like the scary, like can't breathe version, which I've had.
Can you smell?
Yeah, like a little bit, yeah.
Okay.
Well, that's good. It was more like the extreme cold symptoms and yeah, stuff like that. But like had like, it's funny, I woke up, what, I think it was Monday, like yeah, woke up Tuesday, sleeping Monday. And man, I was like, I couldn't tell if I had dreamed or not dreamed. And was I up? Like, it was that like delirious, like COVID brain stuff. Like, I don't know if anybody's had that like experience with it, but like, I was like, whoa, I think I have COVID. Right when I woke up, I'm like, that reminded me of like, just like being very like foggy or whatever. So, you know, that was not super fun for a few days. And, you know, it's been obviously on the tail end here. So yeah, maybe that's the bad. And
sounds like I didn't slow you down at all, though. That's good.
Yeah, I mean, what else could I do except for quarantine in my office? I actually didn't come down Monday or Tuesday, mm-hmm, but for just like a little bit, and was not gonna trade in my state of mind. But yeah, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, we came down and quarantined in the office. But and then I would say the ugly. I COVID's my bad. My ugly is I on well, what would have been Friday of last week, I literally stone bubbled day two of this tournament. With
that was
like
last week, wasn't it?
Yeah, but it was Friday last week, yeah, so I didn't get a chance to share it. I'm gonna share it now, and it's just fucking driving me nuts. Dominating, playing super well this tournament the whole way, like grinding down. Even in the first two levels, I had set over set, and I had like a big pair, so I had like queens versus kings, and I didn't go bust. So like two major hands and two major cooler situations where like the board just ran out in a way where I was able to not lose all my chips. I went from 40K chips down to like 10K chips to start in level two, which is like really bad.
Yeah.
And I ran this all the way back up to essentially like 400K with like 25 people left, 19 people bag for the day. I'm maybe like third or fourth, fifth in chips with 25 people left. And I ended up going out 20th.
God damn. Do you play more aggressive when you're getting close to the bubble, knowing that people tightened up and you can steal a lot of blinds that way?
When you have a big stack, you are supposed to play more aggressive, for sure.
Yeah.
The unfortunate thing with me was my table selection was very bad. Or my seat in this environment was very bad. So I had the tournament chip leader two to my left. So he was opening every pot, basically stealing every opportunity to make chips in this environment or even survive in this environment, because he, like, you know, he's just first into the pot before me almost like every hand that we go. And so I went from basically like one of the chip leaders of the tournament down to like middle of the pack. And we played hand for hand, which when you're on the bubble, right, the next person to go out, when you play hand for hand.
They stop every table. Yeah.
They stop every table. Like they see if somebody goes out. We played that for two levels. And so the blinds just look crazy. Everyone's short. Like the entire tournament has like 20 big blinds or less, except for the few people at each table that are crushing everybody. And the tournament chip leader, who was again just two to my left, he was opening every pot. He opens for a raise. I look down at Ace King and I'm like, you know what? I'm you're probably supposed to fold in this spot to make day two. I'm like, this guy's full of shit. I'm shoving it in his face. What is he going to do? I shove and he like gives me the polite, like, hey, I got it. I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? He has two aces. So he has two aces. Man. So the guy who's been raising any two for basically like with no impunity for the last hour and a half, I shove on him. He has aces and I stone bubble the tournament. So that's my ugly. And yeah, it's a bad beat story, but fuck you guys. Shit sucks. It's painful, man. It just sits with you way too long.
One thing I learned about poker players, they love a good bad beat story. All right, Buzz. Let's do some bold predictions and let's get things wrapped up here. So, in honor of our good friend Baba Yaga, who is out there participating in the Masters, or at least drinking beer on the 16th hole, I think we should do maybe some predictions around that.
Sounds good to me.
So, are you just looking to pick a winner? What's the layout here?
I'm leaving that open to you guys. In fact, my prediction has nothing to do with the winners. My bold prediction is that Baba Yaga is going to do something to get himself on television.
Oh, wow. I'm sure he'll just get on TV. Yeah. What day is he going to be there? Tomorrow.
Yeah.
I'm hoping he streaks, but you know.
Let's see. Okay, if you're going to go bold, I'll go bold. I'm going to say we're going to have a record-setting playoff of number of players tied for the win.
Oh, no shit. What is the record?
I don't know, but it's going to be broken.
Fuck it.
Hopefully it's not something like insane that'll never happen 15. Again. Yeah. Like 1932. How about modern day golf in case there was some like, you know, 15 person playoff in like 1904 or some shit.
I'll tell you what. Okay, Tiger Woods already creamed a guy, so it's probably not going to hit Baba.
Yeah, we lost the Tiger Woods, knocked somebody out.
Did that happen today?
Yeah.
Yeah, he knocked somebody out cold with a shank into the crowd.
Creamed the guy, too. The guy went over like a fallen tree. I was thinking about doing something around, because I love Jordan Spieth. He's my guy.
Well, he's been playing from the roofs. I don't know if you saw that last week.
I feel like it's better to bet on Baba showing up on television doing something stupid than Spieth making the final.
I thought we were going to be picking winners.
Yeah, you can pick a winner. Pick whatever you want, bud.
That's bold.
I don't know if this is bold because it's already been a news story, but look, I'll go with, I'm going to say that Scheffler is leading after tomorrow and his wife has the baby and he leaves the tournament.
Scheffler? Really?
He said that if his wife goes into labor, he's leaving the tournament, even if he's in the lead going into Sunday. I would like to see Woods be in like the top 10. That'd be kind of cool too.
There's no way, is there?
He's 22nd right now. He's at plus one.
Where is Spieth? Is he even on the cut line?
My napkin research here says that there's been no more than a 3-person playoff for the championship. So I guess I'm saying that there will be a 4-person playoff.
I will give you the tie on that. They're currently tied right now. I would give you 3.
That'd be wild.
You'll give me 3?
I would. If you called 3 a 3-person playoff or more, I would give you that.
Yeah.
I'm going to stick with my 4. Fuck you guys. Trying to get me to compromise on my bold
prediction. I want the youngest guy on here. I want to see who's going to blow it. That's what I want to know. That's the best.
Who has the blow up? There's always one.
It's too early to tell. You got to wait till Saturday to know that.
All right.
I think that's going to do it for today's episode. I'd like to say thank you here to Flary and Mr. Banks for joining us tonight. Everybody listening who stuck around to the end, remember to show our panelists some love. Click on those links in the show notes. Remember to check out the combined Discord. Also, don't forget to check out Rare Barrel on YouTube. There's a lot of great content on there. We'll be back soon with another exciting episode, hopefully as impressive as taking a Tiger Woods shot to the temple. But until that day, fondle that 5-star rating in a consensual way and have a great week.
This podcast is intended for informational and educational purposes only, does not constitute financial or investment advice, and should not be construed as such. The hosts, guests, and contributors of this podcast are not licensed financial advisors, brokers, or professionals. Any trading or investment decisions made based on the content of this podcast are solely at the listener's discretion and risk. Trading and investing in financial markets carry inherent risks, and past performance is not indicative of future results. Listeners should conduct their own research and seek advice from qualified financial professionals before making any financial decisions. The views, opinions, and information shared in this podcast are those of the individual contributors and do not necessarily reflect the views or policies of the podcast creators or associated organizations.
Produced by China Shop Productions.